As we have been talking about this morning, the St. Louis Police Department has been reporting some decreases in crime around the city. It's been an effort that's been, well, ongoing for seemingly decades here, and it looks like some progress is being made. How we got here, what's to come, these are all questions that we do not yet have answers for. To help us through them, Thomas Apt is a founding director of the Violence Reduction Center, author of the book Bleeding Out, and associate research professor with the University of Maryland Criminology. Thomas Apt is with us on KMOX. Thomas, appreciate your time. How are you?
I'm well. Pleasure to be with you.
So just a quick overall, your thoughts on the numbers that you are seeing coming out of St. Louis?
Well, I think the numbers are encouraging. You know, you have a 6% reduction in homicides this year, but you also have a 35% reduction over 3 years. And that's good news. It's definitely part of a larger nationwide trend in reductions in crime and violence that we're seeing in city after city. But, you know, the city of St. Louis and the region are doing a lot of things right. And that's why we're seeing the numbers go down.
Yeah, and I'm looking at a news story here from Fox 2 in St. Louis that the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department reported that significant decrease in crime in 2025 with overall crime rate reduction at 16% compared to 24 and 28% compared to 2023. So some really encouraging numbers. And I'll ask this, as I know a lot of people listening, St. Louis has a reputation for being a dangerous city or for a violent city. Is it normal for perception or even optimism to lag behind data when the data does show a reduction in crime?
Yes, it's very normal. In the 90s, where we saw, you know, huge drops in crime, it took, you know, many, many years for people to sort of recognize the new normal and to really acknowledge that cities were slowly becoming safer. So it's not unusual, but, you know, if the numbers keep going in the same direction, I think the change in people's quality of lives will be deniable. And I think if people really think and look hard, there's really simply a major difference between today and what we were seeing in 2020 and 2021 with major surges in homicides and shootings.
You said that St. Louis is doing a lot right. What are those things they're doing?
Well, I think it's a combination of a few things. You've got strong leadership in the police department with Chief Tracy, who's been, you know, really improving a lot of police strategies with, you know, more targeted, more strategic anti-crime efforts. You've also got a lot more stability in the prosecutor's office. There was a lot of controversy with the previous prosecutor. Thankfully, the city and the region have pushed back, pushed past that. But you've also got a lot of great work by community groups, specifically violence intervention work groups that are, you know, getting ahead of shootings and killings and mediating conflicts and providing services to those who need it. And you've got umbrella groups bringing folks together like Safe Lives Now, which is part of the effort that that I'm involved in and the VRC is involved in.
And am I correct in saying that you helped create Save Lives Now?
I think that myself and the Violence Reduction Center facilitated local leaders creating Save Lives Now. Save Lives Now is led by the city of St. Louis, the county of St. Louis, and other regional leaders. The East-West Gateway asked the VRC to come in and help these leaders come together with a unified anti-violence strategy that had elements of enforcement, had elements of supports and services, and was something evidence-based and nonpartisan that they could really get behind. And we helped to develop the strategy. But ultimately, you know, it was the local leaders, it was folks in law enforcement, and it was, you know, impacted community residents. We brought all of these folks together in 2023 who made the final decisions.
Talking with Thomas Apt on KMOX, and we have heard the phrase many times that you cannot arrest your way out of crime issues in a city that it takes a lot of other stuff. And you've mentioned a lot of other programs, but just to give people some specifics maybe of what that actually looks like. What does it mean? What do these crime prevention organizations and programs mean for people beyond, hey, you got to arrest somebody who's committed a crime and then prosecute them, and that's the end of it?
Sure. Here's what Save Lives Now is doing. The initiative, working with this, the city governments and a lot of other partners, including business and philanthropy partners, what we're doing is we're putting together three components: focused deterrence, cognitive behavioral interventions, and street outreach. Okay, now what does that mean in plain English? What it means is we've put together a strategy with our partners where we're identifying the highest risk people who are at the highest risk for shooting or being shot. And we're providing them with both a clear message of accountability. If you continue being involved in violence, you will be held fully accountable. But we're also providing a message of empathy. It doesn't have to be this way. You can make a different decision, and supports and services are available if you want to change. And to make that offer of both punishment and support credible, you need a lot of different partners. Some of those partners are in government with law enforcement, but some of those partners are in the community and outside law enforcement. And Save Lives Now has been successful at bringing folks together and keeping them together. And, you know, that's not always so easy in any city, but especially in, you know, St. Louis and the St. Louis region.
You know, and just to kind of focus on what you said with focused deterrence, and I believe you call it hot spots or hot people in your book, an example of that you give from 2012-2013 in Oakland, California, when they reviewed 18 months of homicide data and found that only 400 individuals, or 0.1% of Oakland's population, were at the highest risk for violence at any particular time. So you're saying, like, we can really pinpoint where these shootings or violent crime are happening and focus all of our efforts on that instead of diluting it across areas that may not need that attention.
That's exactly right. You don't want to stigmatize the whole city with a broad brush of violence. The violence is being disproportionately committed by a very small network of people in a surprisingly small number of micro locations or hotspots. And so you don't have to boil the ocean. You just need to focus on these small number of people and places and offer both a carrot and a stick. And I think that's one of the things that, in this hyper-politicized environment that we have today, is really hard to get across. You know, you have a bunch of folks who are, you know, really focused on tough on crime and enforcement, enforcement, enforcement. And then you have other folks who are, you know, only focused on social justice and program, program, program. And the reality and what the science says is you absolutely need both. And, you know, just think about how we raise our kids. You know, we don't raise our kids with all punishments or all rewards. There's got to be some stick and there's got to be some carrot. Folks who are at the highest risk for violence are no different.
Thomas, we have, and you mentioned politicization here when it comes to crime. And we know that because people run on it, whether it's at the local level or at the national level. They say, we're going to get tough on crime here and everything's out of control and we're going to fix this. But as you mentioned, the national numbers and how it has improved around the country, can a president have a lot to do with what crime numbers are nationally?
You know, presidents can influence crime numbers, but I don't think that they drive them all by themselves. You know, we talk a lot these days about the economy. You know, the president can influence the economy, but they can't control the economy. Crime is very, very similar. And what we saw, you know, immediately after the pandemic was a massive investment by the president and by Congress of Recovery Act funds, ARPA funds. And a lot of those funds were put into balanced public safety measures, measures that improved policing, but also involved community-based organizations. And the city of St. Louis made a bunch of smart decisions with its ARPA dollars and those ARPA investments. In fact, Save Lives Now, a lot of the trainings that we're doing, we've trained over 200 individuals across both the city and the county, are with city ARPA dollars. And we've had a lot of success, but those ARPA funds are running out. And so, we're going to need to find a way to have other stakeholders step up and fill the gap.
We mentioned national trends and how that spike in crime post-pandemic and the recent decrease in crime does follow national trends. And when we look at St. Louis and the decrease in crime that we saw, are we on pace with everybody else? Are we behind? Are we ahead? And what should we read into that?
I think for 23 and 24, the city was on pace or even ahead. But then in 2025, while violent crime, homicides, and shootings are down, they're not down quite as significantly. At least homicides aren't down quite as significantly as elsewhere in the country. But consider what happened in the region in 2025. We had political transitions. We had political controversies. We had the tornadoes. We also saw, we also are facing federal cuts in funding for CVI programs. The city and the region have weathered a lot of literal and figurative storms over the past year. And yet, folks are still coming to the table and doing the hard work, and the numbers are still coming down. So one of the things that I worry about nationally is I worry whether, especially with the federal government removing a lot of the funding, whether this downward trend in crime and violence can continue. But in St. Louis, I'm actually pretty optimistic that there's a lot more progress to be made, simply because last year, 2025, was so difficult, and yet the city hung in there and continued doing the good work.
With the reduction of the federal funding and your concern for it, what sort of lag would there be on that? Would it take a couple of years before we start to see what those results are?
Well, I think we're going to need to find new funding sources. We're going to need money from philanthropy, from business. The city, the county, and others are going to need to step up even more than they have, although they have dedicated funds. We're going to need to come together. This isn't going to be, I often say that reducing violence is a team sport, and a team can't be successful unless the players work together. And so that's what we've been doing, and that's what we need to continue to do. But I do think, we've had some good support from some of our leaders in business. From the Municipal League and from East West Gateway, those have been some of our early funders. And we also had funding from Greater St. Louis Inc. and the Regional Business Council. But we're going to need more people to step up, and we're going to need them to step up greater, because I think we've proven that Save Lives Now can make a difference and can be force multiplier for the good work that the city and the county and other folks around the region are doing, but it doesn't happen for free. And we got to invest in what's working.
As you say, this is a team sport. I've had this feeling, and maybe I'm wrong about this, that people who don't live in the city proper a lot of times look at St. Louis like, hey, you fix your problems and then maybe we'll come hang out there, or we'll spend money there or whatever. Does it take people outside the immediate city to want to be involved in this effort to reduce crime? Or is this just a city-specific issue? You guys figure it out, and then, maybe we'll come along for the ride later.
I think we believe very strongly that this is a regional issue, and that the entire region's destiny is sort of tied together. And so, while most of the work needs to happen in the city, in the county, and also in East St. Louis, for instance, those are the three areas that have the most homicides and shootings. We need everybody's support, and we need a lot of the political bickering to stop, the sort of red versus blue, law enforcement versus community, left versus right kind of stuff. What we need is a consensus around public safety that There's a sensible center here that's, supported by the science, and we just need to do what makes sense. And we need to focus on solving problems and not winning our arguments. And that's what we're trying to promote with Save Lives Now.
I just had a quick question on the team sport thing as well, because I know St. Louis has extreme fragmentation in policing, because we have so many different police districts and not stations, but departments. Does that affect the teamwork at all, make it harder or no?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that because I think sometimes in the city and in the region, there's this sort of feeling like, why can't we get out of our own way? Why is this so hard? And I think it's important to acknowledge there's structural reasons for this. The policing systems in the region are very fragmented for historical reasons, but it's not just policing, it's all forms of government. And that makes the collaboration that has to happen to make progress on these issues harder. And so, I think that there's nothing. And so I think that, folks in St. Louis and around the region need to work harder than they ordinarily would to collaborate because of these structural barriers. But it's important to note these barriers are not insurmountable. As long as folks are willing to work together, they can be overcome.
Thomas Apt, founding director of the Violence Reduction Center. We appreciate your time. Thank you, as always, for speaking with us.
Pleasure.